Season 2, Episode 8, and I'm happy to be still in the studio this week. And my guest that I'm delighted to be joined by is Cork singer-songwriter Jennifer Lyons. Jennifer, how you doing?
Well, how's it going?
It's going good. How are you?
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, pleasure. How are
nice
you doing?
Nice to be back. Yeah, good. Doing well. Happy to be out of COVID, back to the real world, playing music, playing gigs.
Fab. And I mean, you're working away on your own stuff, so it's an exciting time for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been pretty full on. Go through like bursts of recording, maybe 2-3 days at a time, and then go away and kind of listen to the stuff, see if I like it. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't, and then make tweaks. So yeah, tipping away. Hopefully the album will be ready next year. So
unreal, exciting.
Yeah, exciting. Nervous, a little bit nervous.
Yeah, nerve-sighted.
Nerve-sighted, yeah.
Okay, well, I invited you onto the podcast this week to chat about the 4 songs that you've written that are most personal to you. And the first one that you've chosen is Dooningus. Yeah. Why did you pick this one, Jennifer?
Dooningus. So I suppose that the main reason I picked it was because it was the first song I ever released, and I was so young when I wrote it, and I didn't really know anything about songwriting at the time. And when it went out, people loved it. And even now when I go up to the west coast of Ireland, people always ask, oh, will you play Dooningus? And my mom loves it as well. And for like a long time, I actually just hated the song.
Why?
Because I suppose it's such an emotionally vulnerable song. And it's just, it's very innocent in its style. Mm. And I like, if I tried to write a song like that now, I just couldn't. So then lately, when you invited me on the podcast, I was doing a bit of digging and I was like, what songs will I pick? And I kind of listened back to Dooningus, and it was like, I listened to it with fresh ears, and it was like, I kind of wanted to honour young Jen, like baby Jen, and be like, well done, Jen, for being, you know, honest and writing honest songs. And then, you know, time moves you on and your style as a songwriter changes and you get more cryptic in your style. And now I just simply couldn't write a song that cheesy. I just wouldn't be, I wouldn't be able to. I'd feel too exposed and vulnerable and all those kind of uncomfortable things.
So let's take it back. Maybe not that you couldn't write a song that cheesy, but is it that you mightn't be so honest?
Yes. Yeah, I think so. You know, I think that age between 18 and like 23 is there's a real innocence there, and there's such a wildness to, you know, the way you're living, and you're just kind of well, for me, I was just living life to the max, and any time I experienced anything for the first time, I really experienced it for the first time. And I used to just be like totally consumed in, you know, feelings of joy and excitement. And I suppose when I went to Dooningus and I stood at the coastline there, and if anybody has been to Dooningus, it's Inishmore, it's on the Aran Islands, they will understand, you know, the beauty of it. And and also, I don't know, like sometimes there are just some things that take your breath away. And for me, nature and seeing scenery and landscapes that are like just mesmerizing, that really blows me away as well. So, yeah, I just wrote a song about Dooningus. And it was produced in Clare by my great friend, Ger O'Donnell. So I moved in with Ger, I'd say it's 10 years ago now. And he kind of was a very good friend, but he was also a really, really talented musician. So he became, in a way, a mentor, because I learned a lot of skills from him, watching him play guitar and stuff. And I had written a song on guitar, and then I switched it over to piano. And then when I heard it on piano, I was really like, oh yeah, this, I want this on piano. And then we kind of went back and forth with it. He was like, no, guitar. And I was like, no, piano. He's like, guitar, piano, guitar. But I stuck by my guns, and we did a live recording of it. And he had a little studio there on the piano. And it wasn't like to click track or anything like that. It was just straight in. And he put some beautiful backing vocals on, you know, the bridge part of the song, like the outro. And he also did a little low flute solo on it. And it came back, it was like 6 minutes long now. Like, I had no clue about songwriting. I just liked writing songs. I'd always been writing songs and playing music, but like, I didn't have a method, say. So when it came back, it was like 6 minutes long. I was like, oh, Ginny, didn't know I was going on that long. So I like tried sending it off to radio stations, and naturally they came back and they're like, this is a lovely song, but you know, it's like 6 minutes long and you have to have a song like that's 3 minutes long to play in the radio. So we never really got to the radio stations, but I definitely played it at a few sessions over the years.
Will we have a listen to it? And we'll come back and we'll chat some more. Okay, Jennifer Lyons is my guest this week, and this is the first song that she's chosen. This is the very beautiful Dunningus.
Stood tall, looking down, afraid to fall. At the edge of the world, or so it seems, he took my hand, it felt like home. Terrified to let him know, the first time our eyes met on Dunningus. I don't know, searching for a higher love to call my own. I see you're always jumping in, you never look before you swim, but I hope you will remember. Tonight, couldn't keep him from my mind as I willed myself to walk the other way. For I knew you and you knew me. We were young and wild and free. The first time our eyes met on Dunningus. Won't you come away with me, and we'll both get lost at sea. For you're stronger, you are braver than them all. But I am foolish, I am proud, my feet never touch the ground. And so I watched him walk away on Dunningus. Take her hand, I just couldn't understand. Was it all inside my head? On the edge of the world. You left with her, I left with him. You gave a smile, I gave a wink. Oh, I wish I told you so, down on Dooningers. For I'd run away with you if I thought you'd have me too. For you're stronger, you are braver than them all. You walk tall, you walk alone. Two steps ahead, I should have known. But I never will forget Dooningers. No, I never will forget you all, Dooningers.
Beautiful. And we were chatting there while the song was playing, and even though it's your very first song, you feel that it's the one that people kind of go back to time and time again because of the honesty in it.
Yeah, I suppose there's no real bells and whistles. It's just kind of a very honest story, a story song per se.
Yeah.
Like, I suppose you could say it's a folk song. There's a bit of Irishness to it, and I kind of, you know, I just didn't realise that I had, you know, I'm Irish, so of course I'm going to have Irish folk music in me. I don't know where I picked it up. It was probably after being around trad musicians for 3 days straight.
And as a nation, I think too, the Irish were storytellers. You know, we have a love of storytelling, be it through music, through poetry, or through Shanoes, or through people just telling stories. And maybe that's what the hit is with that, with people.
I think so, yeah. Like, if you go to a trad session and you sit down, there's no talk. It's a language in itself. And for me, I had never played trad or knew nothing about it until I was around 21, 22. And then I went to my first flat and I was like, oh my God, this is the best ever. And I very quickly gathered that if I wanted to fit in here, I needed to, you know, have an instrument, a song or a story. And that was it. There was no chat. It was like, you play a song, or, you know, you play a few tunes, somebody stands up and, you know, sings a song. And that was kind of how people communicated. So maybe Dooningers was my way of honouring that time in my life, which was, I suppose, a lot of flas and, you know, Milltown Malbay and all of these musicians that I came to know and become very close with. They're now professional musicians touring the world. You know, I have a friend, he's on a 40-day tour in Germany at the moment with his band Billow Wood. And it's just mad because at the time, we just loved playing tunes, that was it, or having the crack together. None of us, I think, imagined that our life would kind of turn off in this direction where we'd all be travelling all over the world and playing music, and it just became this monster. Now that's all we talk about when we meet. We used to be friends, now it's like we just talk about gigs.
But isn't it fab though? Because if you had known back then the monster that it could turn into, and a nice monster too, I may add,
oh,
right?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Would have taken the fun out of it? Because in the innocence of anything, it's always, you do it to have fun first and foremost. When it becomes a job or it's your way of earning money, although it's fun, it's not as fun as it was when you started it.
Oh, nail in the head. Like, it's work now. Like, we don't get together anymore to play music, just to play music, because we're always so tied up with gigs or tours or things that we have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's great in another way. Like, it's great because you're going to see your friends perform on bigger stages and, you know, there's a wider audience. But it's also like, God, remember when we just used to always, you know, go off to Clare Island or Inishmore or whatever and just get lost for a few days and play tunes.
Yeah, I have a friend actually. I used to manage him at one time in a band that he was in, and now he's over in the UK and he's playing with this pretty big. Well, they were big in the kind of 80s, 90s kind of way, and then they've come back now, and now he's with them. They're a rock band from Scotland. Mm. And at some stage, I am going to go over to him because my thing is, oh, I want to come and see you guys play. But the difference now is, now if I want to go and see him play, I'll now have to get a pass. We have to organise it through his management. He's not as readily available. Yeah, I can watch him from backstage and all that and have the crack, but he's now on a... Every hour of when they're touring is accounted for.
Oh, stop. Yeah, it's all monitored. Yeah.
No, he's loving life, but it's bizarre now. It'll be a different way of me seeing him perform, I guess, is the point I'm trying to make. I love the lyric, right? And you're very descriptive. And it's in the first verse. Side by side, they stood tall, looking down, afraid to fall, at the edge of the world. And when you're out there on those islands, the next stop's America. It's quite literally...
Yeah, have you been? Like, Dún Aengus is, it's unreal. It's just, you know, the whole west coast of Ireland is just beautiful. There are just so many landscapes that you can go to and just stand there and look out onto the ocean and just, you know, be transported in a way. So,
do you find yourself, you go back there?
I haven't been back to Dún Aengus.
Maybe not Dún Aengus, but the west coast. Do you find something... Is it therapeutic for you to be on that side of the world?
Like, definitely have a pull. My dad is a Mayo man. He's from a place called Rúna Aki, which is just off Clare Island. So the very, very last point before Clare Island is my granny and granddad had a house there. So I grew up going on my summer holidays to Mayo and, you know, going to Clare Island, going to Nisturk and going to all these little islands. And then I suppose maybe subconsciously, I lived in the Greek islands for a long time, on and off. And I have this kind of weird pull to get on little boats and go to islands. And, I'm kind of glad that I caught that song at that time because I might have missed it. And now, I'm glad that I have a little page there where it's like, you know, catching something that hits my childhood as well in a way. And, yeah, if anybody is listening that hasn't gone to the Aran Islands, definitely get on the boat and go.
I've been to most of the islands, we say, off the west coast of Cork. And I remember being on one of them and asking the people there, I was like, what's it like to live on an island? And what they said was bang on. They said, this is no different to any other community. It's just there's a bit of a distance between us and the next one.
Yeah, that's
it. You know, but there's no difference.
Have you ever been to Jersey, actually? Jersey Island?
Yes.
So I'd...
We couldn't go across in the cable car, so we went in this tiny little boat. Oh my God.
That was a bit of a risk.
But it was unreal.
That
because
sea is so choppy.
Yeah, because it was a weekend of dancing and all that. So nobody at the time was living there full time. They all only kind of...
So what year was this that you went?
What are we, 2022? 7, 8, 9 years ago?
Okay, so just the fact that you mentioned dancing. Like I did a handful of gigs in Alahees a few summers ago and I decided to go
I
to
love
Jersey.
Alahees.
The cable cart was working at the time. But this man, I met him at the cable cart and he was like, this is a bit weird now, but do you mind if I give you these fish and chips? There's a fella called Johnny over on Jersey Island and will you deliver the fish and chips to him? So he's like, grand, yeah. So I went off in the cable cart. I was on my own, like, there's nobody with me. And I was in this cable cart with the bag of fish chips. And, like, sure enough, I got off the cable cart. And I was like, there was this old man with, like, a paddy hat. I was like, you Johnny? And he was like, I am, yeah. I was like, I have your fish and chips. And he's like, oh, thanks very much. He was a tour guide. So then he took me on his bus all around Jersey Island. And he was going on and on about the dancing and how he loved the dancing and how COVID, it was kind of, you know, it was after COVID, that little break, that summer break there. And he was saying, oh, I really missed the set dancing. And it was just a really wholesome exchange between two humans. And I feel like island people have that wholesomeness to them.
But I find something about Jersey that when you're out in it, and maybe because there's not people living there all the time like there is in the other islands, but there's something very barren about it. You could be like 1,000 miles out in the sea
it's
at times.
Very, yeah, I think there's only... Is it 6 people or something?
Yes.
Like on the island, the population is really, 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 really small. He doesn't live on the island, that guy. He just works there. He has his tour bus and he does tours out of it. But yeah, he sent me a text on New Year's Eve saying, or New Year's Day, like, Happy New Year's Day. Like these, you know, this just an old man that I had met on one of my many random travels playing music. But it stuck, definitely. That's the great thing about playing music.
Now, we say here, we always go on about how, the scenery in Ireland and the west of Ireland and West Cork and up the west coast, is there's nothing like it in the world. You've been around the world. How does it compare, in your opinion?
Let me think. Sheep's Head, like that whole area there, is as beautiful as, say, Santorini and Ios on a summer's day. Mm. When the sun is shining in Ireland, that blue that, goes across, it's just as nice. So I do feel like the Greek islands and the islands off the west coast of Cork, even though this sounds probably just sound a bit mad, they're very alike. The okay. culture there and the traditions, Greek tradition and Irish traditions, are very similar. Very family orientated people, and they're mad as hatters as well. Like, they like to have a good time. So that was one thing I noticed. I really started to miss, I hadn't been to Greece in a while with COVID and stuff, and I, started to spend time down in West Cork when I could. And that was one kind of connection that I made there.
And was that your way of getting your Greek on, by going to West Cork?
Like, I remember the day the restriction officially lifted, where we were no longer allowed, that 5K bullshit thing that was going on for a while, which is, you can't
remember the 2K.
Fuck that. Like, I was so done. I was working in a nursing home too at the time, I was just done. Wasn't playing music and was working in a nursing home. I was completely mental at that point. And I broke out and I drove down to Bantry and I booked myself into an Airbnb. And that whole day just went hiking, and I think I got a pizza in Tesco's, and I was just down in this Airbnb, and it was the best day of my life. Just to be able to drive away, I was so claustrophobic, especially after touring for so many years and moving around. And now I'm kind of done with the moving around so much. COVID killed it. Now I've got used to staying in one place a bit more, but I feel like I'm going on so much. I apologise to the listeners.
Not at all. Now, again, this song is kind of your hat tip to Baby Jen, right?
Yeah.
So what got you into music in the first place? Did you grow up in a musical household?
My sister-in-law said recently, she's like, I just can't get over how musical you are, Jen, when, your house isn't musical at all. The radio doesn't play and stuff. And there's nobody overtly musical in my house. I have three brothers. But when I think about it, there was always music in my house. We would sing in the back seat of the car. We would listen to Mary Black tapes as a child, going on these drives. My three brothers and myself in the back seat, boxing the heads off each other. My mother trying to put manners on us.
Every Sunday afternoon in an Irish household.
Do you know that song, Woman's Heart? Only a woman. My brother used to be, only a woman's fart can just annoy me. I remember that. And she put us into piano. My mother put us into piano, and I was the only one that really stuck with it. So I took piano lessons as a little girl. And then I learned my guitar myself at 13. But I've since discovered that my mother taught herself guitar and also taught herself harmonica, and used to go to house parties when she was a young woman and play. And, if there was a microphone, she'd stand up and sing. Now she doesn't anymore. So I think it's in your blood. There, and my father's side of the family, there's a deep traditional music on my father's mother's side up in the West Coast. Again, didn't have any clue about this, but now it's kind of presenting.
In the DNA.
Yeah, it's presenting, so.
Yeah. And growing up then, who would you have been influenced by at the beginning and now, I suppose?
Should I say something really sophisticated here? I was
No, just be straight up.
With Spice Girls.
Yeah, that's not the first time I've heard this.
I used to dress up as a Spice Girl, and I used to go into the living room and have my parents, my brothers, the neighbours, whoever, and they'd have to sit there while I gave a full dance performance. I wore those Scary Spice bass buns for my confirmation. I just thought they were the coolest in the world, and I just wanted to be a Spice Girl. But my brothers were on the grunge, was a big thing, and my brothers were on the Nirvana, Oasis buzz. So I listened to a lot of Nirvana and Oasis. And then at 14, my dad went to Bosnia for a year. I hope this isn't a tangent, probably is. But he went off to Bosnia with the United Nations. He was a sergeant in the guards here in Cork.
Okay.
And he went for a year, and it was after the war. So, it was a really poor country, and I went over and they had these pirate shops where you could buy CDs, and I had £200, and I bought 200 CDs, packed them into my suitcase and brought them home. And it was like A to Z, so ABBA, Alanis Morissette, Beatles, Bee Gees, C, you know, continuing on. And I think that kind of messed my brain up in the sense that, like, there was just so many different genres and I loved it all. But I, the ones that stand out coming into my teenage years, Alanis Morissette, obsessed. Eva Cassidy, was obsessed with her. Nirvana, Paul Brady. It was really weird. Like, I would pick random artists from different genres and then listen to their albums over and over again.
But they're
again.
All serious songwriters that
yeah,
you've mentioned.
I'm reading Paul Brady's autobiography at the moment and it's like serving me. It's really like giving me comfort. It's all about his journey as a musician. You know, all the albums he wrote, all the different decisions he had to make and, you know, the different meetings and the different risks and a lot of, you know, the risk involved in the job. And it's kind of inspiring me to just keep doing what you're doing. You know,
if a situation presented itself, are you brave enough to take the risk?
It would depend. Like, yeah.
Short
like,
answer.
I always say, you know, I'd have to think about it now as I'm getting a bit older. But and the truth is,
why
yeah.
though?
Because why I do feel you have like to think music about it? Is like a fucking bad relationship. Like you love it and then you hate it and you want to break up with it because it controls your whole life and you're just thinking about it all the time and then you just end up going back to it and loving it again.
And then I guess like any relationship you start writing songs which are your babies.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
that's once you start doing that, then you're hooked in altogether.
It's very hard to maintain a personal life too as a touring musician. I'm not touring anymore, but I found like I didn't prioritise those type of things in my life and now I'm like I need to, you know, if it all went tits up in the morning, I want to wake up in the morning and know that I'd be okay. Like what if I got lost my voice or something or I got sick and I wasn't able to sing anymore, you know, I always said to myself, I don't know what I'd do. Like what would I do? What would be my, and now I'm like, you know, it'd be grand. As she twitches on the chair. We can. Don't need to play. It's fine.
One of the lyrics that's jumped out at me from this song, and I'm curious as to the thought behind it, because you've alluded to a few times that you were a touring musician, right? Now, I'm always on the road, running from what? I don't know.
She's getting deep on me here.
Oh, aye.
Running from what I don't know. Yeah, I suppose I had a bit of a Peter Pan syndrome, maybe in my early 20s. I still have a small bit of Peter Pan syndrome, to be honest. So, like, I never really liked the idea of settling down or getting a job or getting married. And I started to see, you know, people doing that. And I was like, I need to get out of here. So I think I was just a little bit scared of that kind of side of life.
Because no matter what, I mean, we all have a friends group as we grow up. And as people start to get boyfriends or girlfriends, and then suddenly they start getting engaged, and then people are getting married, yet all you want to do is go out and play. And there's nearly a pressure from your friends group. Not that anyone's putting you under pressure, but when everyone else is kind of doing it, there is a pressure, isn't there?
You know, this is something that...
Or is there?
It's always like... It's not there when you're on tour.
Yeah.
Like, if you're not there, you don't think about it. It was when COVID came and I was forced to stop playing music that I started to feel a huge pressure to settle down, you know, start thinking about a mortgage, start thinking about family and all these things. And life doesn't work that way. Mm. It just doesn't, especially for anybody in the creative arts. We're just not wired to just make good decisions. I know, but I think when I was touring, I didn't really think about it at all. I actually only felt pressure in the last maybe year or two, which okay. is quite late in my life. But now I don't feel pressure at all anymore because I'm free. COVID's over. I can play music again.
You can do whatever you want again now. Isn't it mad though that that period of inactivity had you thinking that way?
Yeah,
I guess it's all the years of touring, isn't it? And avoiding all of these. And then suddenly when you can't tour and you can't play anywhere and you're stuck looking at four walls and a window.
Yeah, you know.
And you've watched all of Netflix twice over.
Yeah, like I feel like like, I hope that, I'm just going to be honest, like that 2 years changed me. And I think it changed a lot of musicians. Like I, at coming towards the end of it, I had no sense of who I was anymore. I didn't know. I just felt really, it was kind of beyond apathy. It was sort of like...
Did you feel you lost your identity in a way?
I had a feeling of nothingness in me. Like I didn't want to write songs or play music. Now, I suppose working in healthcare at the time and working in the nursing home had a huge... huge impact on my mental health.
Because you saw the worst of COVID in there.
Yeah, there was actually another song I had written, but it's not ready just yet, about my experiences working through outbreaks in the nursing home. And I also thought it was probably a bit dark. So I was like, I'll leave it out. The next podcast, maybe. But yeah, definitely had a huge impact on me. So I'm only really kind of putting myself back together in the last maybe six months to a year.
How's that been?
Yeah, grand, getting there. I think I did went away and I trained to be a yoga practitioner. And with that, it was sort of like going into an ashram for 30 days, like 1 hour meditation, 6 o'clock in the morning, yoga, more yoga, philosophy, you know, physiology, which I've always been interested in physiology, but philosophy I got really into. And now yoga has been instrumental. And I know I sound like such a cliche, but... it has been instrumental for me in minding my own mental health. Mm. And yeah, I think it's a game changer. I think it is possible to heal yourself. And I think we all go through things in our lives that maybe damage us and leave us feeling a bit, you know, not broken, but only you can heal yourself. Mm. You can go to the doctor and take your medication, which is obviously very, very important if you're diagnosed with depression or any kind of mental health condition. Luckily, I have never had real, you know, chronic depression or anything like that. But there's like a tree of tools that you can use, you know, your spirituality, your spiritual health, your mental health, your emotional health, your physical health. I used to put a lot of emphasis on my physical health, like dieting, running, training, you know, trying to get as fit, trying to get as skinny as possible, thinking if I fixed my exterior, it would kind of fix my inside.
It's the opposite.
Really is. Like learning how to slow down and be present and be more mindful is a very, very challenging thing. Mm. And that's why a lot of us don't do it.
Especially somebody who was playing all everywhere.
Oh, hyper. Absolutely wired. Sure.
You know, always on the road.
I think people look at people that do yoga and thought they're so chilled. It's like, no, we're all nuts. That's how we do yoga. It's like, we have to do yoga if we don't.
Okay, we move on to the second song that you've chosen. And that's the fab Run the Wild. Why did you pick this?
So Run the Wild came a lot later in my life and is sort of written at a time where I felt like I was coming into my own skin a bit more. Mm. So,
as a person or as a musician?
As
or
a
both?
Woman, actually. As a woman. So I just hope that doesn't sound cheesy, but it was sort of like a celebration of womanhood, really. And there was a lot of stuff that was coming to the surface of me when I was writing the song. So I had an idea, like, I love Florence and the Machine, and one of her songs going over and over my brain, you know, that... it's a really strong kind of rhythm throughout her songs. And I said, I'd love to write a song with this to try and, if I ever got to a point where I was playing it live, that I could bring the audience with me and we could have a bit of a bop together. So I was trying to think of something like that. And then I started writing the lyrics. And I realised then that I had a whole load of internalised misogyny that I needed to dismantle in myself. Kind of like the idea that I have kind of carried this identity my whole life, and I was realizing that I was just tying it, you know, to the perceptions, you know, of society's expectations of gender and gender norms and all of this. And it was presenting in anger, and it was presenting in shame. I was shaming myself for being too aggressive. And then I realised, you know, are you being aggressive here or are you being assertive? And the song took on a whole deeper meaning for me the more I wrote it, the more I listened to it, back on it, and the more I kind of played with the lyrics. So, yeah, like, I suppose, you know, I've spent a good chunk of my life reeling it in, like, trying to be softer, trying to speak a little, you know, just trying to be more feminine I grew up with men. Like, I have three big brothers and all my neighbours are boys, and I played sports, so I was always really kind of boisterous and stuff. So yeah, I just was trying to kind of figure all of that out, and that's how Run the Wild came about.
Okay, so we'll have a listen to it and we'll come back and we'll chat some more, yeah?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so this is the second song that Jennifer has chosen. It's called Run the Wild.
Else. But the hunger never left him. Standing with my shadow, drinking like a top shelf. Gotta run the wild out of me. I gotta run the wild out of me to be free. Yeah. Better play nice, treat your mirror.
I love this. Real Lady Gaga vibe. Yeah, we'd all love to go to Nashville. Yeah. There's a real Lady Gaga vibe to this.
Lady Gaga.
There is.
Do you think?
Yeah. And I love the bit at the very, very, very start. And it's so different to the rest. And it's just the way you play with the notes with your voice. You know, the getting caught up thing.
Trying to be like...
Yeah, and then... The song suddenly then goes, it takes off. It's nearly like a pre-verse to a verse.
By any chance, do you get an image of like a geisha girl in the background when you hear those synths in the back? Because that's kind of what we were playing with in the studio.
Yeah.
You're like, do you know the kind of bell sounds? We're bringing them out in the synths, like ding, ding. And then in my mind, I just started to see like geisha girls all over the shop.
Now, when you first wrote this, right? And I'm always curious to know... Yeah, but did you write it on piano or guitar?
Piano. Okay. Wrote it on piano, my front.
But when you went in, is this what you had envisioned?
It's kind of, yeah, like I went into studio, I said to Christian that I wanted this to have a certain energy. I told him that I wanted a certain beat to it. And then we, you know, the production kind of came in and it started to sound really good. I didn't have to, we didn't argue. I didn't argue with him once. It's like, you know, even like, you know, I just talk about the Geisha Girl thing there, like the dung, dung. At first I was like, I don't know about this. And then he was like, just listen to now, trust me. Just. And then I did. And then I would go away and listen to it and be like, this is actually all right. And then I listened to it and be like, shit, I don't like it. And then I changed my mind again. But anyway, I'm happy.
And are you like that in studio? Like, what way are you in studio?
Oh, like my water needs to be room temperature only. Like
only green M&Ms,
is it? Green M&Ms, please. You know, I need to have like a certain temperature. No, studio, I'm a bit of a nightmare. Like, I write down my songs on the page. I have a pen and a piece of paper. Sometimes my songs aren't finished. That's really annoying. Like, you know, it's time is money, etc. I should be a lot more together going into studio. But for me, the only way it works is through getting loose. And thankfully, when I do go into studio with Christian and John comes in with me sometimes, we are able to get loose and to try different things.
So do you think that allows you freedom?
Yes,
more so.
Yeah, I think tact is really important, and you know, I don't claim to know it all. I'm definitely learning more and more. Like, it's an amazing learning experience being in a studio, writing, recording, and all that, and you get a feel for production. But I used to be really nervous, like click tracks, my God, like you put the headphones on, all I have to do.
There's something very intimidating, isn't there? First time you hear the
literally all you have to do is just play to the click. Like, yeah. All you have to do is play to the click. And I used to be just getting myself all in. And then I, you know, if you develop a complex about something, then it gets. But thankfully, that's gone away now. And I used to always
get really, when I used to be in studio, I used to find a really funny drummers. Can't play to a click. And it's like, well, you better learn to play in time then.
Yeah.
But for a drummer even to play to click. Now, I know some amazing drummers who never would have played to click. And then they go into studio and it's like, holy hell. But it makes them a better drummer.
Definitely. Like, every time I leave studio, Christian says to me one thing. Jen, remember now, all you have to do, just practice to your click. And then I come back and he said, did you practice your click? And I'd say, yeah. And he's like, you definitely didn't. But let's go in anyway. But I am getting a like, tiny bit better every time. But you need to be able to hold your nerve in a different way to performing live. Studio is a different situation. It has to be very clean. If it's not clean, it's not worth your time, you know? So.
I love the lyrics. And you alluded to this before the song. We played the song. Better play nice, treat your man right. A four-wheel drive and a house in the suburbs.
Why did you pick that one?
Because they're the ones that jumped out at me.
What about it?
You tell me.
Better play nice, treat your man right, four-wheel drive and a house in the suburbs.
Is this thing of this expectancy of what you think?
Like, I've been in relationships where I've literally been told, like, you're going to move in with me and you're going to live here and we're going to live in this house and this is what you're going to do. And I used to just, one situation in particular, and I just was like, no, like, that's not how it's going to be. And it was that kind of battle of music gen versus kind of, I suppose, my more I do have traditional roots. Like, I'm from a very traditional family. And I felt so conflicted all the time. I still feel conflicted a lot because, you know, I haven't done a lot of the set things just yet. So, yeah, I just got really annoyed with it. I got annoyed with people asking me, have you kids? Are you married? And I just be like, fuck off. I don't want to talk about this anymore. Like, why can't you ask me about my job or ask me about music? And then I realised, you know, there are so many people out there that have this struggle. And why was I feeling shame? Why am I ashamed because I don't have a husband and I don't have kids? Am I just an asshole? Loads of questions after, like in a big cloud over my head. And then I was like, no, I'm not. It was just, that's kind of where that song came from.
But the amazing thing now, and what I notice now, because I'm older than you, right, that women of my generation, my age group, I guess, there's an awful lot of single women because they got into the relationship early, they had the kids, and then they grew apart because you're quite young. there's a big difference between being in your 20s, your 30s and your 40s. Each generation, I always
Definitely.
Think. And I think a lot of people dived in because it was the thing to do, had the kids, and then realise we actually... We've grown apart.
Like the lyric, take a photo. It's a shit show.
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
So I guess the reason I brought that up is if you had done that, you could well have been in that situation too. Whereas you haven't done that. You haven't gone.
I could have a handful of times. Like I've had some really lovely relationships where the opportunity has presented itself and I just never thought about it. If I'm honest, that sounds really... I wasn't in the headspace for... Mm. My mother, at my age, had four kids. Like, you know, she was married at 20, 21. Mm. They're still married, you know, and they get on really well. So I'm very lucky that way. But, you know, times are changing. And, yeah, that's all I have to say about it. Like, move along, Pierce, move along.
The chorus, gotta run the wild out of me.
Yeah, so this is where it gets a bit more deeper. I found myself, you know, being challenged with my own misogyny, and having to face up to that was difficult. Being realizing, oh my God, you have a load of internalized misogyny inside you, subconsciously shaming myself, maybe shaming other women. And I started to just think about it a bit more and look at it a bit more. And I realized, oh, yeah, that's not you. That's society. Mm. That's you wanting to be accepted by society. Like, even, you know, something as, you know, I play music and I'm a singer, and just little comments made to me like, oh, sure, you know, use your looks or play up to this side of it. And I did, you know, especially when I was younger, you know.
Do you regret doing that? Or did it
needed to happen for me to get to where I am now. Like, now I have a really, really strong boundaries about what I will and will do and will not do. And I've had to learn to use my voice. And if it comes across that I'm too harsh or whatever, then that's just the way it has
to
be. Like, I've just been put in situations, especially as a young female musician, that make me cringe now, that I'm like, oh my God, you know, where somebody was you know, being offered musical opportunities, but they're not really looking, you know. And I hate to say it because it sounds a bit American, like, oh my God, but that is the industry. It's getting better, but it's still, you know, it's still very much a man's world, you know.
Okay. Yeah, okay. We got out of troubles, this much I know. We've got our stories, our secrets. They stay here deep down in our souls.
Yeah, so...
What people can't see is the little smile that you just gave me.
I didn't think you were going to ask me every single lyric. It was just going to be like a general chit-chat. This is the song that... like, all this... opening up. Yeah, I suppose it's about, you know, the relationships we have with each other, how we project unhealed parts of ourselves onto each other, and, you know, those shadows that show up, and you can, you know, you go to another relationship and the same shadow will present itself. And you're like,
it's amazing how it's very easy to project the best version of yourself at the beginning. Anybody can. And you know that saying, you know, if you want to know me, come live with me. But I guess when somebody projects the best version of them, if that's not the real them, that doesn't last too long.
No, it
doesn't. And that shadow kind of comes out.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas if it is you, then it'll pretty much stay there.
It's about, you know, I suppose that search for authenticity.
Mm.
And trying to hold on to what makes, you know, you who you are. Very quickly, you could find yourself in a situation where you're hiding parts of yourself to accommodate the person you're with, or vice versa. And in that grows, you know, resentment. And this is where, I suppose, relationships break down, I think.
And how are you with regards to it all now? I mean, you've written a song about it, which means you gave it an awful lot of thought. Is Jen today, are you happy with who you are now and where you're at now in comparison to who the person was that you were writing about?
I think so. I think it's a work in progress. You know, I think we all can do better and be better. I think sometimes you have to make mistakes. Nobody wants to make mistakes. You know, none of us want to go around, you know, hurting each other. That well, a good chunk of us. I mean, there are the minority out there. So it's all about learning, you know, radical self-acceptance, number one. And then from there, just trying to do well for people and be nice and be kind and, you know, not taking things too personally, you know, letting things go and all the rest of it. So, yeah, that's kind of the Run the Wild. It was more a celebration of letting go of that side of myself, you know, where I was sort of just maybe on the line of just angry. And yeah, thankfully, I'm a lot more chilled. Again, yoga, everybody. Do yoga.
Okay, we move on to the third song that you've chosen. And this is called Take It Back. Why did you pick this one, Jennifer?
So, do you know what, like, Pierce, this was like the hardest song. I was like, I thought we'd be having the crack with the first two, but now you're just, you know, more deep questions. Yeah, Take It Back is, oh, that was the most depressed I've ever been in my life when I wrote that song.
Okay, why so?
Oh, like, I had just been through something really shitty and I went into studio and I'll never forget the feeling in studio that day. Like, I'm hopping with energy in studio and I'm trying different things and there's just this kind of flow. This was a song, sat down at the piano. We didn't take too long to do, recorded it. And it was just, it was like the air was so heavy. When it finished, I was really emotional and I looked over and John was really emotional. Even Christian was a bit emotional. We were all just a bit depressed on the chair, like, oh, there we go. And I was like, is this song a bit sad? And they were like, yeah, I suppose it's just, you know.
Why is it so sad and why were you so emotional?
It was sort of like a closure letter, like a song to close a relationship that I'd spent, I suppose, 5 years in and out of, trying to get out of, and that was so unhealthy for me and also for that person. And I knew the only way to get out of it was to close the door, lock the key, throw the key into the ocean and, you know, never look back.
And did you actually physically do that?
Yeah, yeah, okay. I did. Like, I'll never, you know, speak to that person again ever, unfortunately. And it was just, that was the only way I could, you know, heal. I had no self-esteem. It was non-existent. I felt like the worst person in the world. I thought that I honestly wouldn't let anybody near me. I was just like, I'm terrible. I thought I honestly, it was just a really bad time in my life. And
being in the relationship, did it cause those crises of confidence in you?
Absolutely,
massively?
Yeah, hugely. Yeah. Like, I had tried to get out of it a few times.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't realise how dangerous a situation I was in. And there are people out there that are experiencing this. And mm-hmm. when you're in it, you can't really see the tree from the woods. And you're like, you feel like you're going a bit mad. And then you get out of it. And then it's like a whole new kind of part starts where you like have to kind of put yourself back together and restore your own sense of self. So, yeah, it was kind of like just a closure. It didn't take me long to write it. It's not a very complex song. It's very simple. But for me, it was just
a huge step.
A huge release. It was okay. Like, good luck. Good luck, right. And thanks.
We'll have a listen to the song, sure, and we'll come back and chat some more. This is the third song that Jennifer has chosen. And this is Take It Back.
Sorry I hurt you, darling, I tried.
Beautiful song. Really, really beautiful song.
Thanks.
And I think what's lovely about it too is that we all go through relationships that we think we should be in and we think they're wonderful at the time, but then when we kind of come out of them, we realise they weren't. And it's a kind of a celebration of a growth within us, I think.
Yeah, for sure. I'm not the same person at all. Because of, as a result of that, it changed me. And well, that certain scenario definitely changed me. First for the worse and now for the better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, that, and that isn't that always the way? I mean, it's always crap at the start, but if you kind of hang on in there and you're determined to reach the goal that you want to reach and that's right for you, it's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah.
The process is crap. But when you get to the finish line, it's like, okay.
Thank God. Yeah.
And even the line in the chorus, sorry I hurt you, darling, I tried, I've got my demons and they don't lie. And I mean, in relationships, when things go wrong, both, I think, have a part to play in things going wrong as much as both have a part to play in things going right. But there's nothing worse than when you're in a relationship and you're kind of not the wrong one, but you're made feel that you are, so that you're apologising for stuff that you haven't done, but you've been made think that you've done.
Yeah, yeah, I suppose... you know, gaslighting, it's a real thing. Mm. And it's something that I experienced, and I just, that was just, yeah, it was just not for me, and I had to get away. And that was kind of how the song is, sorry I hurt you, like, literally, you know, I think, as I said, you don't want to hurt anyone, but you have to honour yourself and your own needs and who you are as a person. Hiding yourself, hiding who you are, is never going to get you, you know, bring to you the people that you need around you. And maybe a bit of fear. I think sometimes people, out of fear, they stay in something when they know deep down they don't want to. Sometimes, you break up with someone and they're like, want to get back together, and they tell you they've changed and all, and they really show it to you, and you make that dumbass decision. I think we've all done it, like, at least once in our lives.
Yep.
We've done that dumbass thing where it's like, oh, might give it another shot, and it's never worth it.
And you know pretty quickly when you give it that shot.
Almost immediately.
Yeah. Soon as the words come out of your mouth, you're like, oh,
why did I do this? This is a bad idea.
I have a saying, and it's a motto I've always lived my life by, and with relationships, that an ex is an ex for a reason.
For sure.
And you know, sometimes distance and time, and you forget about the bad things, and then you might meet them and the heart will jump a little bit of a flutter, and you're like, oh my God, do you know what I mean? But very quickly, for me, it could be something innocently said, and immediately it puts me right back in, and I'm like, nah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I'd jump in the river if I saw that person. I would literally be. I would hide. I would run away. I would turn around and I would run away. Like
I think we all have those people in our pasts. One thing I'm curious to talk to you about is you toured an awful lot. You left Cork Shores and you decided I want to go and play around the world and become a better player. Where are some of the places that you went? I know you spoke about Ayanapa, but were you in America and further afield?
I was in America, Finland, Latvia, Sweden, Denmark, Norway, Germany, the Netherlands, Greece, Austria. Where else? Spain and, you know, all those places too. I feel like I'm missing stuff. Canada. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
And of all the places that you played, where are some of the coolest that live in your memory? Obviously, all of them are quite fun, right? But I'm sure there's places you've been, you were like, wow, that was just amazing.
Like, it depends on, like, I suppose it's the sentimental side of it for me. Like,
what would that sentimentality involve?
I remember I used to play this gig in an underground basement nightclub in Greece. It was a bar called Circus, still going strong. It's run by three Australian lads. And I was playing a gig over there and this lad came in. He's like, I've got a bar, come and play in my club. And it was like a nightclub, but it was an acoustic nightclub. And there was this guy, his name's PJ. PJ, if you're listening, hey, because he's in Australia and I haven't seen him in so long now. But he had a box and he had it turned upside down, or like he built kind of this thing so that the box is facing upwards as opposed to sitting on it. So he's kind of like got his feet up. Do you mind if I put my feet up?
And
like, he had his feet up like this and be like thumping away on the box. And it was like three Jaeger bombs for a tenner. So I arrived onto this gig and it was all male musicians and the testosterone was absolutely bursting out the windows. They were just like, ah, let's all get crazy. And I was like, oh my God, what the fuck am I going to do? I'm going to die. I felt like I was being fed to the wolves. And then I jumped on stage with this crazy box player, absolute nut job. And he handed me a Jaeger bomb and he was like, say in the mic, three for a tenner. And I was like, three for a tenner, let's go. And then I just sunk, like this is years ago, like it would sink a Jaeger bomb. And you used to go 60 minutes. So it was called Power Hour, the Hour of Power. And you used to just hit the back wall. So think of all the bangers, but you're singing them maybe twice as fast. So whatever, four time now, it's going to be like 700 times. Like, so. And at the time, I just used to do that. I used to have like a gig. It was 3 a.m. So I'd have a shift at 3 a.m. and I would go and do that gig. And we continued on and we met in St. Anton and we did the same. There was like a little network of musicians there and we all became really close friends because we were all that kind of oddball of our friend group that had kind of wandered off into the world to try and play music. And now there was a whole kind of community of us. And each musician would get up and play for an hour and then the next one would get up. And then I ended up from Greece moving over to St. Anton and we lived in this little ski house, a whole load of us, and just complete madness. Like, you know, nothing too off the wall. Not for a podcast anyway. But yeah. So that stands out to me just because it was doing something that it leveled me up when it came to entertainment. I kind of went from being this like, hi, how's it going? I'm Jen. I'm from Ireland and this is a song, to being like, you know, screaming at the crowd, let's go, you know. So it kind of helped me.
Helped your confidence as a musician on stage.
Yeah, the entertainment side of it. A friend of mine, Pete, actually was the music manager there. He's living in Bali now and he works as a breathwork coach. So like it's gas, like I don't know, I'd be killed for saying this, but like we're all mad bastards then. Like we'd go away and just gig all night and now like he's a breathwork coach, like I'm into yoga. It's like we all were like burnt out. We're like, okay, time to
find ourselves.
Find ourselves, yeah.
And a question I ask every week on this podcast, when you write songs, and there are always certain types of songwriters, like do the words come to you first? Is it melody first? Is it music? What's your kind of working way of writing?
When I write, it's normally at a piano I'll start with two or three chords and I'll go from there.
I mean, you have an idea already floating in your head. Is that what kind
no,
of,
I'll need
or do you
to,
just...
I'll need a note. I'll need a note or a chord progression of some kind. And then from that chord progression, then I might start writing a song. Although Run the Wild, there was no melody. I was in my car when I wrote that. Generally speaking, give me an instrument and tell me, go into that room.
So you're good that way. So you can say, all right, tomorrow I'm going to write, we say, from 6 to 9.
No, I'm absolutely useless that way. But if I'm in a studio and I'm paid to be there, they'll be like, what? You haven't written a song? Go in the room and write a song.
And then you can, though.
So I feel like I have to be under pressure to write, which is annoying, considering that this is, I suppose, my career at this point. I should be giving way more time to songwriting than I, you know. And it's a discipline. You know, if I can do yoga for an hour every day, I can surely songwrite every day. But it always comes at the worst time, like 11 o'clock at night, or it's never, you know, I have it in my head that I'm, all right, you're going to songwrite now every morning after the gym. And then I sit down and it's like, it's bright outside and there's no mood or ambience to the day. You know, I don't know, does that make sense? Mm-hmm. But,
So do you have to be, when you're writing, is it very much you have to be feeling it, be in a mood, not a bad mood, but in a mood?
Unfortunately, yeah, I have to be in some kind of state of emotional turmoil, emotional baggage. Yeah, no, I.
But aren't all songwriters, like that?
Though? Someone upsets me, or if I'm triggered by something, or if I'm angry, I tend to, you know, write then. Also, I don't know, I'm not very good at communicating. I'm a great talker, but communicating what it is that is actually bothering me. And sometimes I need to write a song first to understand what it is that's bothering me. Sometimes I write songs and I'm really annoyed because I'll write the lyrics and I'll be like, fuck. And I'll know that I have to do something or change something in my actual, inverted commas, waking life. Like, I'd be like, where did that come from? And then I'll brood over my mind for a few days and I'll be like, oh no, I have to make some, you know, difficult
adjustments.
Decisions. Yeah, yeah. So.
So it's very therapeutic.
Yeah, I suppose.
Okay, so we'll go on to the last song that you've chosen, Jennifer. And I love it. You're going to play this one live in studio for me. And this is the second time that I've had this in the podcast because season one was everything was by Zoom. Season two, then I started getting people in with me, which was wonderful. And now it's kind of progressed that people are starting to play live in the studio. Because when I began this, and when I even had the thought for this way back when, my original idea was that when my guests would come in, they would play all their songs. And then the great pause hit. I'm sure I couldn't have anybody
couldn't
in there.
Anything, yeah.
There were a 3x3 thing on my screen. So I think it's wonderful now, and I love, and I get a kick. I'm getting a huge kick out of people actually being with 4 feet away from me.
It's important, isn't it?
Yeah,
it
because there's expressions that you pick up on when you're in the same room as somebody. And
what do you mean? You mean you can see me shifting uncomfortably in the chair and you ask me difficult questions? Yeah, it's good.
All right, back to screen then. So, but anyway, my point being is I'm really digging that people can now come in and they can play live as well.
Oh, it's so good.
I don't want anybody to feel uncomfortable, but hey, if they do, sure, so
oh, it's
be
good.
It.
No, it's good. It's good.
Now, the final song that you've chosen is called Devil's Cave. Why did you pick this one, Jennifer?
So, again, it's, you know, it's not my best song at all by any stretch, but it's another song that has sentimental value to me. I lived in America for a year working as an entertainer in Disney World. I got the great...
How was that?
Yeah, it was the best, it was the worst, and it was everything in between. So it was just a huge, huge life change going from Ireland to America. Like, I had travelled and done these, but I was literally like, I had a car and an apartment. I had to get a new, you know, I had to get a PPS number, whatever, the whole shebang. So it was a big life change. And I went over there thinking that I was going to the land of the free. And then I got there and I was like, what the hell? Like, Florida is a very interesting place. for many reasons. So I was there about six or seven weeks, and it was the first time I had ever felt homesick, and I was my first time experiencing anxiety, stage anxiety, performance anxiety, just this all around unease in me. And again,
and you had never experienced that before on stage or anything?
Never.
Or not to that extreme?
Like, I, for a long time, you know, sometimes when someone is upset, they like start crying. But for me, if I was upset, I get angry. I'd be like, fuck's sake. You know, I start like giving out. And I started to notice in myself that I was maybe a small bit contrary. You know, with sound checks every day in the fucking blistering heat, I used to do this 4-hour gig on an outdoor stage. And there was a sound engineer there at the time. And I'll just never forget how he made me feel. Like, he used to come out and, you know, survey me and watch my gig. And, you know, Disney has a lot of rules. You're not allowed to wear anything below the shoulder. You're not allowed to wear anything above the knee. You're not allowed to have any visible tattoos. You're not allowed to have any piercings. You're not allowed to say fuck. You're not allowed to have open toe shoes. There's so many rules, rules, rules. And
why open toe shoes?
I don't know. Fucking some weirdos with foot fetish. Anyway, it's 80 degrees and you're there absolutely sweating on stage. And yeah, like, I just felt like we weren't getting on. He, you know, he would say to me, you know, I don't like the sound of your voice when you talk. I'm from Cork, like, what do you expect? So you need to sound more Irish when you sing, but less Irish when you talk, so people can understand you. Now, to be fair, I knew what I was getting into. It was an Irish music residency, but I wanted to play contemporary Irish music. I didn't want to play the Old Triangle, the Old Triangle and the Rocky Road to Dublin on repeat all day, every day. It was driving me slowly insane. And then when it came to, like, the way I dressed, like, I was having war at 13 in school over my uniform. Like, I started putting pink hair dye in at around 14. There isn't a hair colour I haven't tried. Like, I'm always cutting holes and stuff and changing my clothes. And I always, that was just the way it was for me. So then, you know, they wanted to kind of dress me up like a member of the famine. And I was like, no, like, I'm not wearing this long green dress at 3 o'clock in the day. And eventually, anyway, they brought me in, they made me sign a contract to say, stop being a bollocks, we'll send you home. Basically. And I didn't know whether to tell the story or not, because I don't know, I was just like, it was a brilliant experience and I'm so grateful for it. And I made amazing friends, met so many amazing musicians, and it was definitely better than worse. But I think anybody that has done that tour will know what I'm talking about. So anyway, I called up somebody very close to me at the time that I had left in Ireland, and that person was struggling with addiction, and I was really worried when I left that they mightn't be there when I come back, and I had a bit of guilt, and I was like, I hope this person will be okay. And I called that person. That person said to me, basically, you are so much better than this. If you think coming home is going to solve your problems, you need to stay there and you need to do that year. And if, you know, you're basically, you know, you're grand, like, you can do it. And I stayed and I gigged 6 days a week, 4 hours a day for the 9 months. And I went to travel all around South America after. And I did that every day for however many months. And I changed. I did exactly what I was told. I went to the shop and I bought a really frilly dress and I put the frilly dress on and I sang Molly Malone and I sang, you know, the Wild Rover, and I did it all with a big smile on my face. And I'm like, there's still people contact me from that time to say, we saw you play in Raglan Road and when are you coming back? We really enjoyed that gig.
Never.
And I'm like, yeah, no, they definitely won't have me back, I'd say. But yeah, it was gas. Like, I actually texted, I said today that I was going on a podcast on my socials, and a friend that was on tour with me messaged and said, oh, good luck. And I said, I'm thinking about talking about that, you know, that time we were in Disney. And she said, yeah, I was like, when we dressed up like, you know, the famine. She was like, yeah, we were like starving Stevie Nicks up in the stage. We really were, like, we just, yeah, there was just a lot of just too much control. I felt like I couldn't breathe with all the expectations to be something that I wasn't. And I still really struggle with that now. I still have a hard time trying to decide what it is that I'm doing. What am I doing? What's my message? Who am I trying to connect with? You know, all I know is that I can't be anything other than honest, and, you know, it's not going to be for everyone. And I think I'm okay with that now. Like, you know.
Okay. Will we hear the song?
Yeah,
and we'll
sure.
come back and chat some more. So you're going to play this live, so we'll let you get set up. Six strings on my back, nothing to lose. There's a sense of freedom in that. You know, you've taken off and heading off here and all you got's your guitar.
Yeah, so excited.
Yeah.
That was the most excited I think I've ever been in my life. I've done some, you know, pretty thrill-seeking things, but I remember when I got that gig, I was like, yeah, no hesitation. Nothing mattered. Like, I had other backup plans, but once I knew that I was going, So yeah, I felt it was really a great time in my life. So I'll agree with you there. I felt like I had nothing to lose. So.
And the line, but Mama, you're the one who said be strong, and Mama, it's not over till we're done. Is that with regards to the conversation that you had with your friend where they kind of went, just get over yourself?
Yeah, it's, you know, people giving you tough love and telling you cop on. You know, sometimes you need that person in your life to say, here, you know, enough of your nonsense. Get on with it. So, yeah.
And is it the same friend that you saying, if we never meet again, knowing me, you have a friend?
Yeah, I was worried
because
about
you were
the person
worried
at the time. Yeah.
And how is that person doing now?
Yeah, they're great. Yeah,
brilliant.
They're great. Tipping away.
So what's next for you? I mean, I know you're in the midst of recording stuff. So what's the next 12 months looking like for you, Jennifer?
The next 12 months changes. On the weekly. So I will definitely be touring next summer. I'll do a tour in Ireland and I'll do a tour in Europe. And it will be original songs only. Mm. As opposed to, you know, going away as an entertainer. I think that ship has sailed for now. And I think for me, where I find I am most uncomfortable, you've probably noticed through this podcast, is, you know, original music. And I'm, you know, ready to take that little jump and start getting out there to smaller venues. And so I've kind of started this year. Sea Church have been very good to me, open for Paddy Casey.
Yeah, how did that go?
That was great crack. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was the weekend of the jazz. I had a wedding on the Friday. My best friend got married. And sure, we'd planned to go up and, you know, I was going to go to bed at 9 o'clock because, you know, I had a big gig the next day and no drinking, and that didn't happen. So I thought that I'd be dying the next day, but I wasn't, because I was just so excited to be going down. And then, yeah, Paddy Casey is an absolutely amazing artist. I was in my first year of college around that era. Paddy Casey, Mundy, David Gray, and those albums are kind of tattooed on the inside of my mind. They bring me back to moments in my life, my own life, where I'm like, oh, just feels good when I hear him sing. So to meet him and to open for him was a real pleasure, and he's an absolute gent, an absolute gent.
Yeah, because you know the way sometimes they say meeting your heroes, don't ever meet them.
No,
because it can be a
him.
Disappointment. It was everything you expected.
Oh, he was dope, an absolute dope. Yeah, couldn't have made it easier for me, you know. And the crowd down there were really warm. And it was the same with the David Kitt gig. That was also just a really, really lovely gig. And then I had a gig in the Metropole on the Sunday for the jazz. And because I had been busy preparing original stuff, I didn't really have a overtly jazz set per se organised. And I arrived on and it was like 7 o'clock in the Sunday evening. So that's a peak jazz time. And the buzz, like the style, I loved it. And it was just the energy. And I came into the room and it was a listening audience. So you walk into a room and you know immediately whether you have a listening audience or not.
Are you going to be background music?
Yeah, and I kind of like being background music too, you know, because I play so much that sometimes I just like to create an ambience. Drink a pint there. I'm just going to play a few tunes here in the back. But this wasn't a gig for that. Like, this is like, okay, they're here and they want to see what you can do. So I was like, in my mind, like, what the fuck am I doing? But anyway, it was grand. It ended up being the best crack ever. And Inniscarra won the county final that weekend. I'm from Inniscarra, or the weekend before. And I was just really nervous. I didn't really know what to say. So I kind of started with like, oh, Jen from Inniscarra, we won the county final there last weekend. And somebody at the back of the room anyway was like, go on, Inniscarra. So there was one Inniscarra person in the room, so that was good. And that kind of helped me settle my nerves a bit. And as the gig kind of developed, the room got fuller and fuller, and this kind of sea of people came in and they sang with me. And it was like, you know, that climb. You start at the bottom and then there's a climb, a climb, a climb, and then there's just an explosion of like high energy. You hold that high energy for a certain amount of time and then you kind of finish that gig, ordered a taxi, went home and like lay in the fetal position for about 4 days. I can't cope with the world anymore. But yeah, it was great. Did I even answer your question there?
In a roundabout way, no, Hannah, no, you did. I wanted to ask, I mean, you went away and you've toured all around the world as an entertainer, right? But actually now going out and doing, you know, you're looking at doing a European tour of Ireland with just exclusively your stuff. How does the thought of that make you feel? Are you excited?
I am excited, but I have I have ideas that I'm playing around with how I want it to be as a show. Mm. And, you know, some of the content of my songs is quite dark. And I think that's in contrast to my personality. I want people to have a good time. And when I'm playing, I want people to be entertained. I don't want people to listen to my woes. So at the moment, I'm in the process of writing, finishing, you know, the songs that need to be finished, but also preparing material in a way that I know is going to deliver itself in a high energy kind of mm-hmm. package, as opposed to just being one, just one thing, just a girl with a guitar. Because I think that's great, but I want to put more in there if I can. Okay. Does that make sense? I hope so.
Perfect sense. And one final question. I ask every guest this. Where's your favourite place, studio or stage?
Oh, this is really difficult. Oh, studio and stage, for me, deliver the same perfect zone that I cannot, for the life of me, find anywhere else. I've searched high and low for this thing. It doesn't happen all the time in studio, and it doesn't happen all the time in stage, but it's this little place that you go and you're connected, and you're connected to yourself, but you're also connecting outwardly, and you can feel the exchange. So, you know, on stage, sometimes there's a moment in the room and it's just like an energy that you can feel between you and the crowd, and it's magic. And that's kind of like, you can't bottle it. And that's why it's such a bug and it's so addicting. And then studio, it's like, I don't know, taking something. You're gone, you're in it. And then all of a sudden it's 6 hours later and you leave studio and you're fucking like, your head, you're just like, woo, like trying to like communicate after being in a vocal booth for 2 hours. Do I prefer stage or studio? Sorry, I really don't know. Stage, I think. I think I'm more like, I kind of try and tell people that I'm introverted and moody, but nah.
You're an attention seeker.
I'm an absolute, like, love the stage, yeah. Love talking to people, love having that limelight. So I think I'd be lying if I said studio was where I was happier, but I really, really love studio too. It's just that I feel like I've more work to do in studio. I've more learning to do in studio, while the stage side of it now, if you were to say, I don't want to speak too soon, but if I got a big gig tomorrow, like huge gig, a big one, like the Olympia, and they were like, you have to get on stage tomorrow, I'd be like, yeah, I'll do it. While if you were like, you have to go into studio tomorrow and you've 3 days and you have to do this, this, this and this, I would be like, I don't want to do that at all. It's too much for me. So I think stage more so.
Okay. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks so much for having us.
It's been a pleasure.
We need more people like you around to get us out of our comfort zone into studios, talking shite. Good shite though.
Excellent.